Hello everyone, just popping my head in to say hello. Do y'all know it's been almost a year since I did the last podcast. When I released those first three podcasts, it's been almost a year. Boy, how time flies. So I've already started on my next series of podcasts. I'm actually doing, they're going to be entitled Jezebel Through the Chakras. So the first three episodes that I did were called Writing Ain't Easy. So this episode I'm doing now is kind of like a reboot, I don't even know what to call it. It's like me popping my head back in, telling you what has transpired in the past year before I could just jump straight into my new series, Jezebel Through the Chakras. But what sparked this is there's been a lot that has happened, y'all, okay? It's been a lot that's done went down. I've had some family issues. I think within a month after I posted the third podcast, there was some issues from a relative that passed away years ago. I mean, this relative passed away when my mom was a child. So I had some issues with that. And then as soon as those issues was over with, a couple months later, I had the next major issue, which is why I want to comment on something that's going on in the news right now. Within a couple of months of dealing with that family issue, the very woman that the book, The House of Jezebel, is kind of based off of, she passed away. So it's been about 3 months since she passed away. And I posted some blog posts on thehouseofjezebel.com on the website. You can go back in. So she died on, I think it was March the 13th of 2018. So any post after that up until the present, even the one I'm about to post now, you might get, that'll help you get some insights as to why I was writing what I did. If you go back even further in the blog post and you get to the one that talks about resurrection of Hurricane Nate, that was the beginning of the family issues that started within a month or two after I posted the third episode for our podcast. So I'm popping back in. This is going to be the fourth episode. This is going to officially conclude Writing Ain't Easy, okay, before I go into the next series. But this is what I want to say, because with this obituary that went viral, that's on the news, that everybody's talking about, I want to kind of talk to y'all a little bit about that, because it sparked some things. It helped me to realize, hey, I went through this a couple of months ago. I empathize with this sister and brother. I think the sister is 60 and the brother is like 58, and their mother died a week ago today, actually, and she was 80 years old. The story behind it is they were abandoned by her at very young ages, and they had to be raised by their mother's parents. So this was their maternal grandparents. And so all these years have passed, and they're posting, they put together an obituary and put it in a newspaper. I mean, it's very short. There's like, I think it's like 5 paragraphs. And every paragraph is only one sentence, with the exception of the very last paragraph that has 2 sentences in it. So I'm not going to necessarily read it verbatim, but I would kind of skim over it. And then I want to talk about some insights from the research I did about the son and the daughter that wrote this, and under what circumstances and why they wrote it. Let's go ahead and talk and go into this obituary. The mother's name was Kathleen. The two adult children are named Gina, G-I-N-A, and Jay, J-A-Y. In the first paragraph, Kathleen was born on March 19th of 1938. I'm not going to say her parents' name. She married a man named Dennis. Okay, they married in 1957. And they had 2 children. Okay, that's the second paragraph. The third paragraph is where things get a little honest, shall I say. It says, and I'm going to quote this, open quote, in 1962, she became pregnant by her husband's brother, Lyle, I'm not going to say his last name, and moved to California, end quote. It goes on to say, and I'm quoting this, she abandoned her children, Gina and Jay, who were then raised by her parents. Okay. And it lists their name. That's the fourth paragraph. The fifth paragraph, open quote, she passed away on May 31st, 2018 in Springfield and will now face judgment. She will not be missed by Gina and Jay, and they understand that this world is a better place without her, end quote. Now, this obituary was posted one newspaper in the area in Ohio. I think this is where they're, I think they're in Ohio. Is it? No, Minnesota. I think it's in Minnesota. Would not even post this. They said it was too offensive to print. Okay. So another newspaper printed it. And because it got so much attention, they pulled it from their news site. And then legacy.com, usually when people pass away, the funeral home will submit their obituary to legacy.com. So you can go on to that website. You can sign the guest. You can order and send flowers to the family. Well, they took her off of that too. Okay. They took this obituary off of that. And so I want to go through this because basically there's a newspaper overseas that was able to contact the son. They interviewed the son about what was, why did they do this? Why did they feel the need to write such an obituary about their mother? I can empathize with them. I don't think what they said was angry. I actually think they were very nice. They didn't even go into any details because they really wanted to call. If they were doing this out of spite, then they could have gone into even more details. They could have talked about the names of the children she had with her brother-in-law. They could have talked about their own dad and what he did. And they didn't do all that. They just said, look, what they're trying to relay is, look, we were hurt and we are still hurting over the fact that our own mother abandoned us, went and started her family somewhere else. And even in this article, they said that at one point she came back into town and the two of them was actually standing in the same room with her. She didn't even look at them. She didn't even acknowledge them as her children. She was too busy showing pictures of what her life is like where she moved to California with her brother-in-law. Okay, can you imagine that? You standing in the room with your own mother, and it's like, I've had that happen to me. I know what it's like when a parent is literally embarrassed by the child they had because of the circumstances surrounding it, and they're taking that embarrassment, that shame, and they are not even, they can't even look their own child in the eye. They can't even acknowledge, you are my child. And they can't separate the shame from the actual child, if that makes any sense. So let me go through this article real quick. I got all my links as to where I got my resources from. They are at the bottom of this. I'm doing a blog post on this podcast, so it'll be listed at the bottom. But I'm going to scan this article real fast and kind of give y'all some highlights. So again, Kathleen was 80 years old, okay? And the obituary basically is reiterating that she was a Minnesota woman who abandoned her children. And her children had to basically be raised by their grandparents. Let's see. The son is a Army veteran, okay? And his sister, I think she's a cleaner. Let's see, what else? He says, you cannot believe the dysfunction of a family. They will never know what we went through, but it helped us to write this. We wanted to finally get the last word. This is from an article from Daily Mail Online. Basically, there was someone who leaked some information from inside the family, another relative, that basically said that this Jay and Gina's parents, both of them, because this is a question. Where was the father? Because if the mother abandoned him, then that means the father wasn't in the picture either. So according to this article, there was another family member who shared a little bit of, who went off the record to share some information and let it be known that the father, both the father and the mother, Kathleen and Dennis, were both unfit parents. They were both drinkers and partiers. It was Gina's idea to write the obituary, but he actually wrote it. Let's see. She was told that her mother was on the deathbed by a cousin. That sounds familiar. That's kind of how I was informed. But it says that Gina had no desire to go see her. All she asked for was a picture. And then she talked to her brother. Her brother actually put together the obituary. Like I said, it was rejected by one newspaper. It was printed by another one. But because of the popularity of it throughout the world, it has been taken down. There were people who are close to both of them who were shocked as to, after reading the obituary, that they had even gone through what they went through. Some of them thought that the mother had died a long time ago. They didn't understand or know why these two kids were being raised by their grandparents. It goes on to say that they were not the best of kids. They did get in trouble. And that even now they're still struggling with it, particularly the sister is still struggling with issues even in adulthood that stem back from problems during her childhood. They also talk about, which I thought was very interesting, even though they were raised by their grandparents, it said that they were left out of the grandfather's obituary. The grandfather died in 1981 and the grandmother died in 1986, but him and his sister were left off of his obituary. There have been ongoing rivals in this family, which would make sense. That would make a whole lot of sense. There were people who got upset because the grandfather left them some money as an inheritance. What else? Okay, this is what he said. I want to share it. He said, we didn't have so much as a card from her. One of the things he's talking about is that the mother, she, I think it was what, 1962 was when she got pregnant by the brother-in-law. And then, let's see, she returned back to Minnesota after he died in 2008. And then in 2016, her actual husband, I don't know if she was divorced from him by then or not, he actually died in 2016. And he was, and what Jay is saying about her was that this whole time, they never even got so much as a card, like a birthday card from her. That's when they give the example of one occasion where they were standing in the room with her and she's showing pictures of where, how good her life was in California with her kids and stuff. And she didn't even acknowledge they were in the room. Woo! They did say that they acknowledged that there would be backlash at them writing this, but at the end of the day, they wanted to have the last word and they wanted people to know they suffered, you know. Acknowledge the fact that they suffered. And they didn't put all the secrets out there. I promise you. That was a very short obituary. It wasn't, to me, it wasn't rude. It was honest. It was their way of saying, okay, we were raised in a time frame. I thought this was something that was only common in the South. Because he mentioned this in the article about the 50s and the 60s and how people were so quiet and didn't want to talk about things like this. So here he is saying, yeah, let's talk about it, you know. And that's how my book is as well. It's like, look, it's time to stop covering up stuff. Now, that don't mean you go around telling people all your business. But one thing that Spirit of God has shown me is that some of the things that I have gone through, the things that I have overcome, there's somebody else who's struggling with the same thing. And sometimes you need to open your mouth because you don't know who else you could be saving or helping or delivering by saying, this is what I went through and this is how I overcome. And maybe you can get some insights from this and get your own deliverance from my story, from my testimony. Does that make sense? I'm going to do this really, really quick because someone sent this to me because I too was informed via text that something was going on with my Jezebel. Yeah, I was informed via text. Even when she died, I was informed via text. Some of the people texting, I didn't even know who they were. I want to quickly go over the obituary from my Jezebel, because people really don't understand that just because someone dies, that does not mean all of the pain or whatever you went through is over. Okay? That's not what that means. People are wrong in even remotely thinking that. A lot of times when someone dies, especially if the person was an abuser in any form, sometimes the memories all come back. Like, our bodies store the very memories of things that we've gone through, whether the events were positive or negative, whether they were good or bad. Even the food that you put in your mouth, your taste buds have memorized what's good to you, what's bad to you. Same thing with trauma and pain and hurt and heartache. That stuff, if not dealt with, will settle into the cells of your body. Okay, your cells have memories. They remember that. So when a person dies that was an abuser, that hurt you in some way, especially if the abuse went on for a long period of time, that does not go away just because the person died. So I had to go through my own memories, my own situations, my own issues, because of the fact after my Jezebel died, and the fact that I didn't get the opportunity to, she never reached out to me. I talk about this in the, like I said, if you go on the houseofjezebel.com and look at some of the posts, I kind of talk about this. I don't go into a whole lot of details because it's affecting me, but it's not affecting me, because this is not a process that I just started when she died. I've been doing this for years, because healing is a process. But people don't get that. It's not something you just get over. And especially if you were not a person who was actively on the receiving end of any type of abuse, whether the abuse was verbal, sexual, physical, whatever. If you were not on the receiving end of that, then you probably don't understand the impact it could have on someone. Because usually when people run their mouth and say, well, I don't know why she talk about this and blah, 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 blah. If you ask them, has anybody ever raped you? Has anyone ever molested you? Then why are you making comments about sexual abuse when you have never been through it? You're not in that person's shoes. Same thing with physical abuse. You wasn't there when this person was doing the drinking and the hitting and all this other stuff. If you were, you would probably have a different opinion. I don't mean everybody in the house is going to view a situation the same way, but you also can't walk around with blinders on all the time. You can't be free. You can't obtain freedom if you're too busy walking around pretending and living in secrets and covering up lies. People are hurt by that. Okay? There are people who carry, you don't understand, if you're trying to carry a lie and carry secrets, that stuff, once again, can store itself in your body. And before long, there could be people who really want to say something that won't say something. Then all of a sudden, you got sicknesses showing up in your body because you're holding on to some information that wasn't never intended for you to be carrying anyway. I'm going to get more into that when I talk about the chakras and go through it and talk about how things can happen spiritually, things can happen energetically, and how that will come back and manifest in your physical body as a form of sickness, as a form of illness, as a form of disease. So don't discredit people when they come out and start talking about some of the issues that they've been through, if you've never been in their shoes and you don't know what they are going through. Now, there are people who lie about some of the things they go through. There are people who put their information out there because they want pity. But one of the things that this sister and brother clearly said is they agonize. They kind of consciously agonize as to the short obituary they did release. Do we really want to put this out there? Even though we're not all out, the only thing they revealed in the obituary was, look, she cheated on her husband and she left us. They didn't go into any more detail. They didn't list none of the children's names of their half-brothers and sisters. They didn't go into all that. Because some of that they don't even know. And in a way, it's good that they don't know, because that would be even more grief and more pain that they would have to go through It says in the article they didn't even know they had half brothers. So let me go through real fast. I'm not going to read verbatim by any means. I'm just going to kind of, because my Jezebel, when she died, she actually wrote her own obituary, okay? So the one I read to you earlier was obituary that was actually posted in a newspaper. My Jezebel did hers a little bit different. She didn't put her obituary in the newspaper. She saved it for her funeral. And if you read the, I think I got an article, I can't think of the name of it right now, but I think it may be called something, Ritualistic Death of a Jezebel. I did that one actually on Friday the 13th. See, when you understand numerology and astrology and some of this other stuff, you'll understand the significance. The coincidences are not coincidences, is what I'm saying. So let me do a little comparison real quick. The obituary that they posted about their mother was 5 paragraphs long, okay? It was 1 sentence per paragraph, with the last paragraph having 2 sentences. I'm telling you this for a reason. Now, someone forwarded to me a copy of the obituary for my Jezebel. Her obituary that she wrote is 8 paragraphs long. And I'm going to kind of briefly go through them, because I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her. You can learn more about her shadow side, which is actually another article that I wrote about. But she had 8 paragraphs. Her obituary covers an entire 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. Okay, I got it in front of me. I got a printout of a picture of it in front of me. So the first paragraph, she basically tells you where she was born, and she mentions her late parents. Okay, her mother will be mentioned in the book, The House of Jezebel. Okay, so I'll refer to her in at least 2 different chapters. I'll be referencing her mother. In the second paragraph. Okay, first paragraph, she's talking about she was born. She does not tell you what year she was born in. I noticed that. The thing that's significant about this obituary, I want to say it up front, is that there are things in her obituary that if you tried to ask her face-to-face about some of this stuff, she would pretty much chew you out. Okay? She would pretty much chew you out. It was none of your business. But now that she's dead, she has no problem with you, quote unquote, knowing. But I have a problem because there's some things in here that she didn't put that she should have put. So if I had to wrote her obituary, it would have been a little bit different, okay? So if I see something I got a problem with, I'm going to tell y'all. I'm going to tell you. I don't like that, okay? So first paragraph, I don't like the fact that she ain't got her birthday listed, okay? I got a problem with that. But just so you know, she was born in 1932, okay? That ain't in here. The very next paragraph, she started talking about church. She started talking about the colored church that she went to at a young age and the one that she continues to go to up until her death. Okay? Local Baptist church. The next sentence in this paragraph says, the church members mostly refer to her and it gives her last name. They either call her by her last name or they call her sister and whatever her last name was. You know, she said also her close friends and relatives all did this. Okay. Y'all, that's a lie. Okay. That's a lie. And the reason that's a lie is this woman had a PhD. Okay. When I was growing up, yes, maybe when you were at church, the older people, the pastor may refer to you as sister, whatever. But when you left that church, you call this woman doctor. Okay? Doctor in her last name, or you call her doc. You did not refer to her. You did not ignore the fact that she had a PhD. Okay? You call her doctor such and such. And you get it right. Okay? So let me stop and say that, because I had somebody to actually come at my office, I think it was last week, and call me Dr. Farmer. And I'm thinking, baby, you don't know no better. You don't know no better. And you trying to be funny. You don't even understand the significance of what you're saying. Because so what? I know a lot of people who are, so what? I went to a Bible college. I put in the work because I had to do assignments. This is back in the day now, okay? I had to do it was a Christian Bible college. I did the assignments. I had to write a dissertation. So what? I did the work for a doctorate of education. It was a small Bible college. But people around here is acting like I went to Princeton and got a, for originally accredited university and got it. Y'all, my thing is this. I use Dr. Jakeitha from a professional perspective. When people are around me on a personal note, you better, if you at least know how to pronounce my name, I'm happy, okay? Call me Jakeitha. Don't come at me talking about, well, doc, you know you got this degree, and I, don't come at me with that silly stuff, because I'm not on that level. I don't come at people, well, you better call me by my title. Forget that. Now, if you want to call me that out of respect, that's you. But I ain't going around putting no stipulations on folks saying, you better call me this, this, and this. That's just stupid. That's childish. That's a waste of energy, okay? But when I was growing up, the household I was raised in, this woman was referred to as doctor. Everything she wrote down had doctor. Her bank account had doctor on it. Her, matter of fact, I remember I had to do some legal paperwork in the state that I was doing the legal paperwork. It was information between me and her. The state sent the paperwork back and told me she got to take that title off because that title don't mean nothing to us. This is a state, okay? A state of the United States is refusing to take a document because she had her title on it. They said, no. We want the name that was on her birth certificate. That's what she got signed. And I had to send it back to her. She had to do it all over again. You have it notarized and everything. They refused to accept it. I think that's kind of interesting. But anyway, that's the second paragraph. So she goes from talking about her parents to immediately talking about her church home. So paragraph 3, she continues to talk about church as it relates to when she was an adult. And it talks about how she worked diligently in the church and she was never too busy to do anything she was asked to do. Here we go. I don't think I have a copy of this. But on her actual program, she had under the Old and New Testament scriptures, she listed the name of a particular pastor. Now, it's interesting because she mentioned this pastor's name in her obituary that she wrote. So in this third paragraph where she is continuing to talk about her church endeavors, she mentions the name of this particular pastor who's supposed to be present at the funeral doing the Old and the New Testament scripture. Y'all staying with me? So here's the next paragraph. Third paragraph, second sentence. She is pretty much taking a stab at this pastor. She says she served as musician / choir director for, name of the church, from 1960 to 1993, and was released July 30th, 1993, under the pastorage of, and she lists this man's name. Y'all, this woman, this is 2018. This 2018, y'all. This obituary says she was released in 1993. Why is that in your obituary? Basically, you was fired from, and I kind of remember that because I was a kid when that was going on. So I got caught up in that crap. Why you put that in your obituary? Why is you talking about being fired from the church and you list this is the pastor who it happened under, and the man is probably sitting right up there beside your coffin. I'm gone because I know I spent too much time. She go on to talk about different pastors and under different pastorages and stuff that she did in the church. So she lists two more other pastors, and both of them, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know if they still alive. I don't even know. But the fourth, the fifth, and remember it's 8 paragraphs. The fourth, the fifth, and the sixth paragraph, she is being talking about her professional background, her education, and her accolades. She used 3 paragraphs to talk about that. Then when you get to this paragraph 7 and 8 is when she said, oh, by the way, I got some family. Now, I'm used to paragraph 8. You know, that's the last one. I'm used to people putting in, these are my surviving relatives. In the paragraph before that, they'll say, this is who survived. But this woman does not mention anything about her husband until the very end of her obituary. Now, see, the first paragraph where she was born, the second and third paragraph is about the church. 4, 5, and 6 is all accolades. all accolade. And paragraph 4 is strictly education. Where she got her education from? I told y'all before, if somebody had asked her, where did you get your PhD from, doc? That woman would have chewed you out so much. Why you worry about where I went? That's not even so important. I did the work. I have the degree. Why do you care where I went to school at? But you got it in your obituary. I guess now she don't care if people know. And I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to go into all that. But she got, you know, she got a bachelor's. She got a master's. And she got a PhD. Okay? So paragraph 5, she started talking about her career. In paragraph 6, she talks about all the organizations that she was a part of. The Order of Eastern Star, the Heralds of Jericho, the Daughters of Isis, if you add, no, I'm going to leave that alone. Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, she left that part off. Retired education personnel, she was a retired education director, part of the Chamber of Commerce. She got her other very special accomplishments because in 1980 she was a delegate to the National Democratic Convention for the re-election of then President Jimmy Carter. I remember seeing that picture in the living room. Okay, that was the highlight of her life, was that picture of her shaking hands with Jimmy Carter. So paragraph 7, here we go. After we've talked about the church, we talked about all things we've accomplished in life. Oh, by the way, I was married. Yeah, I got married. Yeah, and had a couple of kids. That little paragraph ain't but two sentences. So she has on here that she was married in 1952. This is something else I distinctly remember when people would ask her about, when were you and Nate? When did y'all marry? And what was your marriage ceremony like? And oh, that woman would, oh Lord, she would get chewed out. And she wasn't the type of person that would cuss you out. She knew how to do the politically correct cuss you out. Okay? She never got to use any profanity to chew you out. That was one of the things you didn't ask her about. You didn't ask her about her late husband. You didn't ask her about her wedding. You didn't talk about none of that. So for her to... They were married in 1952. It's a little shocking to me because I've seen multiple marriage certificates for the two of them that are years apart. So I don't know if it was 52 or 54, but I think it's very interesting that it says on here that their union produced two daughters. That ain't the truth, because between 52 and 54 was 1953, and they had a kid that is not even listed on this obituary, that's supposed to not even exist. They had a son not listed. You dead now. Why does it matter if anybody knows? What's the secret? Because if I had wrote this obituary, it would have said United in Holy Matrimony. I would have said in the early to mid-50s, because we not sure. Until I see a marriage license that came straight from the courthouse, I ain't finna believe nothing. They got married. Supposedly, they got married in the early 50s. How about that? To their union was three kids born, a son and two daughters. The son is deceased and a daughter is deceased. Let's tell the truth. The next paragraph, she actually started listing all the people who are those who cherish her memory. At least she got my name spelled right. You know, I mean, listen, but where she got I live, she know doggone well I hadn't lived there in like 10, 11, 12 years. But that's irrelevant. What I'm trying to show you with all of this is that death, and I have an actual blog post on this, that death is not the end. When people understand that, even the other article before, they were talking about basically, pretty much they were basically saying they hope their mother rot in hell. This is how I'm going to end this, because death is not the end. So when people come to the earth and they live these lives that create heartache and pain, this is a part of their karma. That if they're coming here and they spend their whole life doing some of the things that they do, if Kathleen spent majority of her life partying and drinking, that is her karma. Her not taking care of her children, because children are divine assignments, unless you treat them as if they're a divine lesson, a divine assignment is, ooh, I'm going to leave that alone. I'll talk about that. I may talk about that in the book. To leave your divine assignment and go party? Do you realize what kind of karma you're creating for yourself? Do you realize the hurt and harm that you're causing against your own children, who are your divine assignment? People don't get that. So Kathleen and the Jezebels and whoever else somewhere who come and live these type of lives, they've already been sent here for a lifetime because they've done this before. So this is not new to them. When you understand reincarnation, this ain't new. They've done this before. And if they end their lives, if they get all the way to their deathbed and they're still just as hateful and just as spiteful, there were some things that people told me my Jezebel did at the last minute. When you understand numerology, you understand all she did was create more karma for herself. So which means you're going to have to come back here and live another life and be accountable for what you did in this one. So the pain and the joy, I was a child, some of the things that this woman did to me. So it wasn't like I was sitting there asking, do this to me, treat me this way. You're the adult. But because you have allowed certain things to happen, you will be held responsible. There are things in my life, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm perfect. Everybody, if you're on the face of this earth, you're dealing with some karma to some extent in your life. You're here to learn certain lessons. You're here to experience certain things so your soul can grow and advance and evolve. That's it. So if you come here and you squander a lifetime partying, drinking, you know, worried about accolades and all this other stuff, you coming back. You'll be back and you're going to have to play this little game all over again. You'll be causing hurt and harm to somebody else. Even worse is if you come back and now you're on the receiving end of having a parent who is out partying, who's out ignoring. In my case, my Jezebel wasn't out doing the drinking and the partying, but she was so into her social events. That was so important. There were so many times, and I talk about this in the book. I give you examples in the book of times when I needed her, but she was off somewhere doing her thing. So, just all I wanted to share with y'all. I'm gonna let you go. I already took up more time than I needed to. I'm gonna leave it there. I got so much more I could say, but I'm not. I've taken up enough time. So I thank you so much. I thank y'all for tuning in. You can go ahead and expect, and I'm already started on the next series, Jezebel Through the Chakras, where I can go into more details about some of the things that I share here, about how Jezebel affects us, the things that a Jezebel does, and how it literally sets into our bodies. And it manifests in ways that you would probably be shocked that it didn't even show up as. Because that pain and hurt, it doesn't go away. It's a process to heal. It doesn't just go away. It's not just a blink of the eye. It's not just put on some blinders. Let's pretend like it didn't happen. That's not reality. So I thank y'all for tuning in with me and listening to me rant and rave. I look forward to releasing the next series for y'all. Please, if you have not, go visit www.thehouseofjezebel.com to check out my writing progress. I'm actually halfway through the book. Every chapter has a testimony. That's how it starts. And then I go into the body of the text of the book. So all those, every chapter, except with the exception of the very last one, has something written in it, okay? So I'm actually, if you go on the website at the very top, you will see a link called Chapter by Chapter. You can see my progress in the book. If you've never watched the book trailer, it's right there on the homepage. If you're wondering what is a Jezebel spirit, right below the book trailer is a short article that goes into what the Jezebel spirit is and what it's all about. So I thank you for tuning in. I love you guys. You will hear from me soon through the next podcast called Jezebel Through the Chakras. Until then, this is Jakeitha Farmer. I think I didn't say my name at the beginning. This is Jakeetha, author of The House of Jezebel, Fulfilling Destiny in Spite of Your Upbringing. To learn more about me, please visit www.jakeetha.com, J-A-K-E-T-H-A.com, where you can find my links for social media, so you can follow me and keep up with what is going on in my life. Until next time, peace, love, and oneness, wholeness and health to you all. Goodbye, beloved. Goodbye.